Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
As the results roll in, will heads roll at the top of the Conservative Party? Welcome to Political Fix, your essential insider guide to Westminster from the Financial Times with me, Lucy Fisher. Coming up, it was the last big test of public opinion ahead of a general election, and it does not look good for the Tories. Where does it leave Prime Minister Rishi Sunak? To discuss it all, I'm joined in the studio by my FT colleagues Miranda Green. Hi, Miranda.
Hello, Lucy.
And Robert Shrimsley.
Hi, Lucy.
Also on board to help us digest the results so far is James Kanagasorium, Chief Research Officer of the public opinion research company Focal Data. Hi, James.
Hi, Lucy.
So before we kick off, I should point out we're meeting at Friday lunchtime when only some of the results have been declared across the 107 councils and 11 mayoral contests that took place across England on Thursday. So this is an unfolding story, but there are some clear signals that are emerging. And one of the most clear-cut stories of the night was the parliamentary by-election in Blackpool South, which Labour has won with a colossal 26% swing. Here's what Keir Starmer had to say.
This was a direct message to the Prime Minister, which is, you know, make way, let's have a general election, let's allow our country now to go forward.
Miranda, it was a big deal, Labour picking up this seat, wasn't it? And I think fair enough for them to point out this huge swing of 26% when they only need a 12.5% swing to win the general election.
Yes, absolutely. And it's the core, it's a seat in the core territory that they need to win back from the Conservatives after those Tory advances in 2017 and 2019 across the North and the Midlands. And it is a good story for Labour, not just because of their own win, but also because of this other factor, which is going to cause Rishi Sunak a lot of problems in the coming weeks, which is the role of the Reform Party and the debate that will go on inside Conservative ranks about whether Reform doing so well and splitting that vote on the right should lead to a change of strategy at the top of the party. So I think the Blackpool result is one of the most interesting so far by a long chalk.
Well, I think you're right, and Reform only narrowly missed out on snatching second place from the Tories by about 117 votes, so it was really close cut. And we'll come back to discuss Reform shortly. But Robert, let's just step back and look at the sort of the council results so far for the Tories. It's been a pretty disastrous night for Rishi Sunak.
Yep. I mean, it's been, they're on course to do as badly, I think, more or less, as the polls were predicting. When I last looked at the number of councillors lost, they'd lost over 150 councillors. That was working out at about 50% of the seats they were defending. So it's grim. It's as grim as people expect it to be. I don't see anything really for the Conservatives in the local election results. The nature of these contests mean that there were probably going to be fewer councils changing hands. But by and large, this is a bad night for the Conservatives, it's a bad night everywhere. Some of them might argue there's a couple of places where Labour could have done a bit better, but I think it's nitpicking. I think that plus the by-election all add up to really, really bad night for the Conservatives, really pretty good one for the Labour Party.
And James, you're very much a details man, so pick out some of the...
How very dare you?
Well, they're all details people, but I've allowed you, Robert and Miranda, to have a broad brushstroke, you know, first bites at the apple.
Never been so insulted.
challenge accepted. I'll be coming to you too shortly for your in-depth picks. But James, which particular councils changing hands or areas have really stood out to you in terms of the council votes?
So, a couple. So, I would say that Rushmore was probably the most interesting, which I think is includes Aldershot. Might be wrong on that. Kind of around,
this is Rushmore in Hampshire.
In Hampshire, and you know that's Aldershot has not really been a Labour seat, really, in recent memory. It's been pretty safely Conservative, the majorities have been built up. You know, it wasn't really on many people's radars, and a couple of other kind of key bellwethers, because I think one of the things that people are struggling with is what are the true bellwethers. I'm very interested in the results from Peterborough, very, very interested in results from local wards from Colchester. These are the types of seats that are really are kind of super indicators, right? Because there's been a lot of discussion about the red wall and the blue wall. But usually whoever is the prime minister wins these and wins them well because they contain a lot of marginal voters. So when they do flip, the swing is quite large. And we did see that in these kind of areas. I guess the other kind of interesting fact is how uneven the swing has been. In certain places. Look, there's a big story here, and we don't yet know what's called the national equivalent vote share. But having taken a look at it, it does look like it's around Labour at around 37%, 38%, and the Conservatives at around 24-25%. We don't know yet. That's usually calculated by Professor Rawlings and Thrasher, and there's normally another type of vote share, just to make it more confusing, which is called the projected national share, so NEV and PNS. First of all, that's my first port of call. Why? Because they're quite predictive. So in 1995 and 1996, Labour led at 21 points actually in 1995 and I think 16 in 1996. This time its share actually doesn't look quite as large on the national equivalent vote share. So for me, this indicates, look, if there was an election right now, right today, so let's say yesterday had been a general election, it doesn't quite indicate kind of 1997 levels of blowout. But it does indicate somewhere between there and, let's say, the 2019 election result, but in inverse.
Does that take account of whether the Labour voters got more efficient and whether actually they may be not getting as many votes in some of the places where they pile them up, but they're getting them where they need them?
No, it's a really good challenge. So right at the top of the programme, you mentioned that at the 2019 election, I think Labour needed a 12% lead in order to govern at a national kind of Westminster level. That number has clearly gone down. Like, one of the big story from the local elections is the efficiency of Labour's vote share. It's lost clearly a lot of votes in more kind of green orientated areas and more urban, very Remain heavy areas, but it's picked up a huge number of votes. Like, the main thing that the Conservative vote share change since 2021 has been correlated to is the Leave vote by individual wards. And so clearly what's happened is a de-alignment has happened. You talked about the realignment. And since then, basically, the Conservative vote share looks a bit more similar to how historically it would have looked at, but actually at a much lower level. So you're right, Robert. But I mean, here's the thing. It just doesn't quite yet look like 1997.
Sure.
And I think that's probably an important point to make.
Mm. Miranda, so one of the things that's muddied the picture and the narrative, as we sat down, Ben Houchin, the poster boy of levelling up for the Tories, was announced as the winner of the Tees Valley mayoral contest. Now, given that he won 73% of the vote in 2021, at North Korea levels of support, you might say, I think it would have been a complete electoral disaster for the Tories if he'd lost. And of course, his majority is much reduced. There's been a significant swing away from him of about 16%. But still, it allows Rishi Sunak to claim some kind of win. It might reassure some Tory MPs that personal brand can trump the party's polling nationally.
So the mayoralties, there's a lot going on, wouldn't you say? And, you know, the spin has been dizzying this morning. I think we can all agree as the Tory party tries to find some sort of points of light. And clearly holding on to a flagship mayoralty like Tees Valley is going to be very important for their kind of defensive arguments over the next few days. And it's true, you know, he was a key ally of Boris Johnson and the whole kind of post-Brexit Tory party levelling up idea. What they're doing in the Tees Valley with a sort of deindustrialised area trying to rebuild it is very, very important to the idea that the Conservatives in government have actually been able to achieve anything in terms of their promises for the parts of the North. So it's a really important result for them. But you're quite right. Underneath his win is concealed something really significant, which is that whole territory covered by the mayoralty are seats that Labour hope to take for the Westminster election, and they would on this kind of result. And actually, I was talking to people inside the party HQs this morning and to some of James's colleagues in the sort of sophology world, and they were saying this is one of the things to really look for inside the mayoralty territories. Look at the target seats and the swing seats, and that may be hidden by the overarching result of who retains the mayoralty, as it were, particularly some of these new areas, East Midlands, the Yorkshire mayoralties. There are a hell of a lot of Labour targets there. So look at the Labour swing.
Robert, you're dying to come in.
Well, yeah, I think the mayoral contests are going to be really interesting and play if they go as it's beginning to look like they're going, Ben Houghton has won. It begins to look like Andy Street might hang on in the West Midlands. If they do go that way, this will be the big defence mechanism for Rishi Sunak. It's one of the things that's going to keep him safe, probably, from challenge. But in fact, they're offering quite a different message to that. A, for the reasons Miranda said, which is that actually underneath it, the swing against Ben Houghton was certainly enough to wipe out Tory MPs in those places. Secondly, because if you look at what Andy Street and Ben Houghton have both run on, it's not the Conservative national policy position at the moment. It's what it was under Boris Johnson. They run on big government, effectively being at a regional level, spending, investing, putting money into the region, active government. And Rishi Sunak is being pulled towards the opposite, which is government doing less, spending less, taxing less. And that's not the policy position, which is working out for Ben Houghton and Andy Street. And the second point I wanted to make is that, yeah, we were also waiting for the London result, where it certainly looks like it's going to be close for Sadiq Khan, is that what you're seeing is the power of the personalities, as Miranda was saying, in the mayoral contest. And that actually what they've been like is making a real difference. So in the contest where there hasn't been a mayor and they're coming for the first time, you'd expect them to go roughly along the lines of the national picture. But in Tees Valley, Ben Houghton, West Midlands, Andy Street, you've got people who are overperforming against their party because they've got a personal factor and people are voting on it. And in London, you're probably going to get someone who's underperforming against his party. So voters are voting on the character of the mayor. And I think it'd be very dangerous for the Tories to extrapolate from that from the general election.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the big question, one of the big questions going into Thursday was whether Rishi Sunak would face an immediate leadership challenge. It's possibly too early to say, but I would wager that it was something of a gift to Downing Street that Dame Andrea Jenkins, one of the most staunch, robust critics of Rishi Sunak, came out on Friday morning saying she doesn't think the plotters are going to get over the line for the numbers of letters needed to launch a no-confidence vote against him. There have been some dissenting views to that. Justin Greening, former cabinet minister, Kwasi Kwarteng, the former chancellor, still saying that colleagues might roll the dice. James, what's your take of what Tory MPs will be feeling this weekend with the results we have so far? And if West Midlands goes the way of the Tories, if in fact in London the margin is narrower than expected between Sadiq Khan and Susan Hall, what will Tories take from that?
I think they'll be looking at three things. The first is the mayoralties, which we've discussed, which have clearly offered a bit of respite for them. You know, Street and Houghton, yes, they're you know, they represent a different type of conservatism, but they are quite different. They represent, you know, Andy Street's more this kind of Cameroonism, you know, pretty kind of hands-on, literally a manager, literally ex-CEO of John Lewis, and Houghton much more this kind of social democracy, you know, nationalizing the airport and stuff like that. And I think it clearly offers the idea that there is a model that works, right? Because they're really looking at some very bad results fundamentally, and just understanding actually there are models of conservatism that can work, have worked, and have come out and delivered results. I think they'll be looking at the Blackpool South result and looking at the reform kind of vote share. I know we're going to kind of come to that. And that's a bit of a curate's egg because, yes, it's high. You know, I think it was around 17%. But fundamentally, if you look at the kind of wards where reform are running in, they're running substantially lower than UKIP were in 2015 and 2016, often about two-thirds to half of what that vote share is. And, you know, the last YouGov poll before these local elections had them at 15%. Now, here's the thing. If reform really are at 15%, they wouldn't be getting 17% in Blackpool South, right? Blackpool South is 68% leave. I think the threshold was, if reform were to be performing like UKIP did in their by-elections in relation to their national vote share, I think the threshold was 27%. Jim Blagden, I believe, of More in Common actually flagged this. He built like some analysis on that. They're performing 10 points below that. So I think there is this feeling that I think reform is slightly underplayed in the polls. However, it does look like a lot of leave votes have flowed to Labour. Mm. You look at where reform haven't stood, actually the flows to Labour are very sharply correlated to the leave vote and therefore the kind of reform propensity. So they'll be looking at that and thinking, this is quite a difficult thing. And then the third thing is London. We don't know what's happening yet. I think it's a bit of a shock. It does feel like a bit candidate specific, to be honest. Like Sadiq Khan was very unpopular. Like the fundamentals of the numbers of Londoners who wanted change, who didn't think he deserved re-election, were really at a kind of all-time high. It looks like turnout has been very, very low. But I think just in terms of mood music, just the capital, right? This is the area that is the most anti-conservative in the country. The idea that that could be close or within 5-10 points is cephalogically mad. You know, we're talking about the polls. I believe there was only one poll that had them within 10 points. I think that was Savanta. And we had some pollsters who had 20 to 22, 25 point leads. That's quite a big miss. So I think a lot of people will be thinking, okay, there's a clear story here, but there's enough there, I think. There's enough evidence there to steady the ship, I think.
I think there might also be questions for your profession, James, and about the pollster methodology again after quite a turbulent time for the industry in recent years, if those polls are shown to be quite so off in London. Let's pause to talk about reform, some really interesting points you made. This is what Lee Anderson, the party's only MP who recently defected from the Tories, had to say about their performance.
We're here to stay. We're making inroads. We're a small party. We're polling 3-5% last year. Now we're polling around the 15% mark. Our trajectory is going up and up and up, and the Tory party is going down and down and down. And come the general election, this party is going to win seats.
So fighting talk, as we're used to from Lee Anderson there. Miranda, look, they did do well in Sunderland. They didn't win seats there, but seemed to steal a lot of the Tories' lunch. And yet they only stood in about 1 in 7 seats. Quite a mixed picture.
It is. And I think it goes to the heart of what they think they're in this game to do, actually. I know we had a slight disagreement about this on a previous podcast. I still don't think that they are adapting a kind of traditional, this is how you build a serious political party model, for however much Lee Anderson talks it up, because they didn't stand in very many places at all. And I think they're still in the game at the leadership level to be disruptors and to change the course of the Tory party. If not, why not use this huge round of elections just before a general election to try and build some sort of power base, from which is how you actually get seats in Parliament eventually? Having said that, it's going to be looking quite tempting for Farage to stand, I think. So that's what everyone's waiting for.
And there's been some chatter that he might be making a statement in coming days.
Well, you know, as even Lee Anderson himself said, nobody quite knows what's in Nigel Farage's mind and no one else can speak for him, right? So that's the big unknown quantity there. I think that, you know, James's explanation of the cautious note on how reform performed this week is really important. But it does not mean that the Tory party will stop taking the wrong message from the results, you know. And this ongoing conversation about how on earth the Conservatives keep their winning coalition together into the approaching general election is going to remain as live as it ever has done, even if they're looking at the kind of detail of what happened in Blackpool South and saying, well, they should have done even better than they did. They're still biting at the Tories' heels in places where it gets noticed by the right flank, saying, what happened to real conservatism, capital R, capital C?
Robert, let's move on to talk about Starmer. It was as much a test for him, this set of elections, as it was for Sunak in many ways. James highlighted that Labour gained control of Rushmore in Hampshire. They also gained control of Redditch in Worcestershire. Plus, they took Hartlepool and Thurrock from the Tories, as well as winning lots of individual council seats across England. Has he lived up to expectations? There's been this sort of orthodoxy, at least from the Tories in Westminster, that there's no love for Starmer and that people don't vote for Labour with any enthusiasm.
Yeah, I mean, I think broadly, it looks like he's going to be where we thought. I mean, I don't think there's so far been that much new information from these elections. I think by and large, these elections are confirming most of what we thought. The only area where I think there is new information coming in is what one might call the Gaza penalty that Labour is paying. We're going to start getting numbers on how many votes that's cost them, certainly in these elections at least. Otherwise, these elections are more or less telling us what we knew before. So I think Starmer will feel he's on track. One thing I do think we're going to see, I just feel particularly given James's comments on London, is they've got to squeeze that reform vote back. I mean, I've always been a massive reform sceptic. I don't believe, unlike UKIP, they don't have a central policy goal which drives them forward. They're a place for people to go when they're angry and fed up. In London, it looks like reform will have done very, very badly because people are angry at Sadiq Khan, know that Susan Hall was the only option for them. And I think what this points to me is the Tories playing much more aggressively and much, much nastier about Starmer and Labour and really ramping up the threat argument about Labour as a way of pulling back some of those reform voters. You're not going to pull them back on the quality of your delivery or all the great Conservative policies or by suddenly becoming more right-wing than they already are. But they could pull them back by saying, you guys don't realise just how awful it's going to be under Labour. These people are so woke, they're so left, and you know, you can't take the risk. And I think that what we're seeing today probably points to a lot more of that in the election. So Starmer, I think, has to be ready for it. And what we've seen so far is that when Labour's really challenged on some of its policy positions, they're quite weak. Mm. They fold quite easily.
We saw a bit of that this week on immigration, didn't we? The sort of question marks left over some really quite easy questions.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, they sort of managed to sort of work out their common line by the end of the day in terms of improving the asylum processing system. But I mean, if it was that simple, the Conservatives would have done it. So I think we're looking at an area where Labour can be pushed. And I think the one thing that the Conservatives have in their favour is this view that when you really start pushing Labour, when you really start talking up the threat of Labour from their point of view, you can probably pull people back. And which is one of the reasons why I've always been a bit of a sceptic about these polls saying they're only on 18 or 20%. I don't think it'll be like that when we get to it.
James, let's just go back to what Robert was mentioning on Gaza and the backlash to Labour's stance on Israel and what's going on in the Strip. There was the shock result in Oldham. Mm-hmm. Also some suggestion that Labour may lose the West Midlands mayoral contest because votes that ordinarily would have gone to their candidate might have shifted to the George Galloway-backed independent. How big a factor is this Gaza backlash?
So I think it's part of a wider story also of the Greens. And these sets of local elections. You know, if I take a step back, the local elections tell me a lot about the kind of medium to high probability that Labour is going to be the next government and the type of size of that government and what it looks like and the fact that they're winning typical marginals. But usually it's a good idea to look at when a party's at its high watermark to see its weaknesses, because normally it tells the tale that's about to come. You could see that in the 2019 election, right? When the Red Wall fell, you know, not that much attention paid on bits of the blue wall where Liberal Democrats had put on 20 to 25 points in some cases. And actually, this feels a little bit similar because you're seeing the recipe for success at the Westminster level for an election either this year or next. But you can see pinching, basically, at the edges of its coalition, not just on Gaza issue amongst Muslim voters, but you're seeing Greens, I think, taking wards in Norwich, in Newcastle, Bristol, there's been a big challenge. You know, this is the inverse threat of reform to the Conservatives. But the Greens are a very serious party with many councillors, with a huge infrastructure. Yes, it's not quite clear where they're going to land. And also, one of the great salient issues of our time is the transition and net zero and affordability. So they're going to be at the forefront of one of the key wedge issues of a potential next Labour government. So for me, you can see all of these issues coming together with foreign policy issues like Gaza. You can begin to see what that kind of opposition in the left looks like in the next cycle. And clearly it's had some kind of effect, potentially a little bit in London, a little bit in West Mids. But I'm very interested in the very localised threat that Labour have on their flank on that issue. And clearly I think there'll probably be some kind of response, I imagine.
Miranda.
Yeah, I think this is really interesting because when you look at the non-Tory opposition parties and how that sort of group of other parties might impact the election result in the general election, this becomes really crucial, doesn't it, James? Because you've got a really clear pattern of complementary voting between Labour and the Lib Dems, where actually, you know, good results for the Lib Dems in the areas where they're hoping to do well in these local elections this week just builds the idea that there are certain bits of, you know, blue wall territory, if we're calling it that, that the Lib Dems can take and save Labour the trouble, as it were, to build that governing majority. But with the Greens, it's a different problem because they're taking votes off Labour in Labour territory. So that sort of complementarity of anti-Tory voting doesn't work when it comes to the Greens. And I do think they've got a bit of a problem there.
And don't you think, one thing I think is a potential silver lining in the West Midlands and whatever happens in London, potential silver lining there, it does help him reinforce the point to Labour-minded voters. Actually, you can't take it for granted. You can't give yourself the luxury of voting Green. You can't give yourself the luxury of not voting for us, because when you don't, you get the Tories. So actually, I think that's a useful message for him.
I totally agree about that. And actually, the fact that the London mayoralty is being fought for the first time under first past the post would actually help them. If it's really narrow and Sadiq Khan squeaks back in, they can say, you're really going to risk it. And that squeeze operation on the green vote is going to be really crucial to Labour this time. They've always been quite complacent about it in previous general elections, because it has always in the past, at the end of the day, swung in behind the Labour candidate where it matters. Will it do so this time? Probably, but it's not a given.
I'm interested in what you all think the leaders of the two main parties, at least, might do off the back of this of these results in order to shore up their positions. And particularly the question marks for Rishi Sunak. That narrow, steep path to victory looks incredibly narrow and incredibly precipitous. Robert, you know, he's already under pressure, hours after the first results were out, from the right of his party to tack right, from the centre of his party to stay mainstream and cleave to the centre ground. What do you expect him to do, or should he do, to try and do better in the general election?
Well, I think the problem he's got is that there's a bit of something for everyone in his party. For the people who want to say move right, be more conservative, they've got Reform Surge. They've got a Susan Hall doing probably reason pretty well in London. For the people who say don't do that, you've got Andy Street, you're much more mainstream figure. So there's something for everyone in the Conservative Party, which doesn't help. But given that I think he won't face a challenge, or he won't be pushed out, I think that what he should and will take from this in the end is the people who win, when we win, is where we show we're delivering. Where we show we've actually given something to the people that they want, they're prepared to give us their trust. So I think he will take this as being an endorsement for delivery conservatism and ramping up that point. The only caveat is I do think that in London, a big part of Sadiq's problems have been around the anti-motoring tax, the ULEZ, or the sense that he has been pushing environmentalism too far. So he might feel more confident pulling back on that.
James.
I think the main challenge here will be how to handle the immigration issue, which has now risen up again in salience. And this is why the analysis of the Reform performance is really important. But I guess the thing that I imagine some people should start to pay attention to is the Labour leavers, right? Because we're all talking about like all the Leave vote has just transferred straight to the Reform Party. But actually, I think it was a recent poll showed that Leave vote from 2016 for where it is basically split three ways now. And the Labour-Leaver coalition is underappreciated and underidentified, and understanding what they think, because I think they're actually quite distinct to, say, Conservative Leavers or Reform Leavers. I think there it's much more about public services. It's much more about green issues. It's much more about other things other than just immigration. I mean, still, they're more migration sceptic than most other audiences, but I think they're quite distinct. And I think a bit more attention to them would be very helpful.
Miranda, what can we learn from the turnout in these locals? On the one hand, they're always low when it comes to council elections, police and crime commissioner polls. On the other hand, there is this narrative that the public is at best ambivalent, at worst, you know, has a sense of antipathy towards politics right now.
Well, it's pretty unhealthy. And I think just saying, oh, they're always, you know, low turnout figures for this sort of election is a little bit depressing. You know, we'd like them to be a lot higher. I mean, these mayoralties are a big intervention in how the country is governed. And the whole point of them is to get power closer to people. So, you know, in those areas, you know, it'd be nice to see them a bit higher. And I think even in Tees Valley, it was quite low, wasn't it? So I think it is a problem. And apparently in London, we're expecting it to be very low as well. When it comes to sort of what that tells us about, for example, Labour, because I'm sure that Conservatives will be touring studios even now, saying this just goes to show that there's no great appetite for what Keir Starmer is offering. I'm not quite sure. I mean, famously in 1997, as many Conservative voters sat on their hands as came over to Labour. But, you know, you do want a sort of feeling of engagement there. You know, the PCCs, the Police and Crime Commissioners, this is a very recent experiment with local democracy. They were only introduced during the Cameron era. It's a sort of experiment in its infancy. You know, maybe it will bed in over time. But there is a sort of question mark about some of this creation of extra layers of government at local level and how well they're actually sort of understood you know, and how they then interact with Parliament and other levels of local government. And also the funding, I think, is an issue. You know, we've seen local government completely starved of funds over the last few years. And yet we've sort of got other levers of government in play. I think it's kind of complex picture. I'm not that surprised sometimes that the voters think it's all a bit much. And of course, we had voter ID this time as well, mm-hmm. which may have affected some parts of turnout.
Certainly affected Boris.
Although we're told he did vote Conservative. That's what his spokesperson confirmed when he turned up later with his ID of
nice
turning
up
without
to clarify
it.
That.
I love that. Yeah. Well, listen, we will bring you more analysis next week when we've got the full picture, but I'm really glad we could get together today to do this snap reaction. We've just got time left for Political Fix stock picks, and I thought we should focus on the other major story this week around what is going on north of the border in Scotland. So, Miranda, who are you buying or selling in Scottish politics?
Well, it's been such an extraordinary set of, I can't say drama. It's been dramas, hasn't it? Every couple of days gives us a new one inside the SNP government, and it's travail. So having lost Hamza Youssef as First Minister, Kate Forbes, who was seen as a potential front runner, has decided to stand aside and let John Swinney have a clear run at taking over. Swinney's a kind of old guard, seen as more sensible, maybe get them away from some of the more sort of extreme policies and back onto what the mainstream Scottish voters might be interested in. I think Kate Forbes is one to watch for the future, though. So I'm going to buy Kate Forbes, even though she's a controversial figure because of her religious allegiances to the We Freeze.
Remind listeners who've not heard of the We Freeze.
Yeah, well, they're kind of fascinating. I mean, you have lots of parties like to say we're a broad church. A broad church, the We Freeze are not. and they even think that evolution is not sort of scientific fact, but just another belief like creationism. You know, it's quite out there. But, you know, we're a liberal country. I think there's a place for people with all sorts of views, and she's not trying to impose them on anyone else. She was seen as a good finance minister. She's an ally of Swinney's. She's actually been on maternity leave, which may be also part of her decision not to run this time. I think she's one to watch for the future of Scotland. And, of course, however mainstream Swinney, Forbes and that gang sort of to the fore again in the SNP are, they still want independence for Scotland, and we shouldn't take our eye off the ball there.
James, who are you buying or selling?
Sell everyone, I don't know. it's pretty complicated. I think you're going to disagree, Robert. Douglas Ross is worth paying attention to. I'd buy him.
And remind our listeners who he is.
Douglas Ross is the head of the Scottish Conservatives. So they didn't have local elections this time, and it would have been really just cephalogically great if they had, but that wasn't the programme. If you look at a lot of the local election results and a lot of the polling, the national vote share of the Scottish Tories is down quite substantially. But it's very interesting at the ward level, that's not the case at all. They picked up an SNP ward last week. On a 10% swing. And I think what you can see from the MRPs is actually a fairly quite surprising retention of all of their seats and a potential for gains.
And MRP is another type of
another type
polling,
how you kind of forecast seats from a national poll. And I think one of the curious features of Scottish politics is that it often goes the opposite direction to the way that vote shares are in England and Wales. So I think that's worth keeping an eye on. I'd buy him.
Robert?
Well, I'm a bit torn. I mean, I did think about selling Douglas Ross, the Tory leader, who brought down the no-confidence motion, which essentially precipitated Hamza Youssef's fall. But I also think the consequence of that is that they've got rid of a leader who was no good and replaced him with John Swinney with someone who is actually better. And as Miranda said before we came on air, if you've got an opponent who's known as Hamza Useless, then probably you want to keep him in place rather than get rid of him. But in the end, I've decided to sell the Scottish Greens. Because actually, I think they're the really big losers out of what's happened in Scotland over the past few weeks. Because essentially, it was their threat to leave the coalition with the SNP that provoked the whole crisis. And the one story that everybody in the SNP agrees on is that we need a more arm's length relationship with the Greens. And I'm sure they'll still have to do deals because the parliamentary arithmetic requires it. But that actually the Greens, what they stood for, the issues they were pressing, not just their social policies, but also some of their green policies, were harmful to our interests, the SNP felt. And therefore, we've got to have a bit of distance between them. So I think they're going to lose a lot of influence as a result of this.
What about you, Lucy?
Well, I'm going to go for the easy win here, and I'm going to buy John Swinney, who looks like he's going to be crowned SNP leader on Monday and confirmed as First Minister next Wednesday. And I just think it's a bit of a win for greybeards as well. He's the ultimate operator. He's the longest serving MSP at Holyrood. He's been there for 25 years. Of course, he was an MP before that. And this ain't his first rodeo. He has been SNP leader before, and I think he will have learnt from that. So he clearly doesn't view himself as an interim leader. He's made that perfectly clear. He has an ambitious programme for government. He obviously, there's been some sort of bargaining behind closed doors with Kate Forbes to get her to clear the way for him. But I agree with you, Miranda. I think she's going to play a crucial part in his administration.
Well, it's such a great story. I mean, I've been poring more over Scottish politics this week than anywhere else in the UK, I must say.
Well, we'll have to do full episodes of Political Fix on Scotland soon. Miranda Green, James Kanagasorian, Robert Shrimsley, thank you for joining.
Cheers, Lucy.
Bye.
And that's it for this episode of the FT's Political Fix. Before we go, a reminder that you can join me and colleagues for an FT subscriber webinar next Wednesday, May the 8th. You can submit questions in advance to put to Stephen Bush, George Parker and Camilla Cavendish, who will be joining me. So sign up now at ft.com/UK webinar. I've put a link in the show notes along with free FT links to subjects discussed in this episode. There's also a link there to Stephen's award-winning Inside Politics newsletter. You'll get 30 days free. And don't forget to subscribe to the show. Plus, do leave a review or a star rating if you have time. It really helps us spread the word. Political Fix was presented by me, Lucy Fisher. Produced by Audrey Tinlin, with production help from Leah Quinn. Manuela Saragossa is the executive producer. Original music and sound engineering by Breen Turner. Cheryl Brumley is the FT's global head of audio. We'll meet again next week.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.